This conversation between Joe Nuxhall and Walter Langford is being taped in Hamilton, Ohio, in the YMCA Businessmen's Locker Room Lounge on December 16th, 1985. Joe, you're aware, I'm sure, that countless people are intrigued by the fact that you're known as the youngest player ever to appear in a major league ball game. And I know they'd be happy to learn the circumstances that led up to that incident.
Well, it was actually 1943 when I was first approached to sign a Reds contract in the Cincinnati Reds organization with their Ogden, Utah Farm Club, which was in the Pioneer League at that time. And we turned it down because of our basketball team at Wilson Junior High here in Hamilton. We had won two championships, and I would be a ninth grader in 1944, of course, and 43-44 basketball season. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to see if we could make it three in a row, and I did not sign and played basketball at Wilson, and then signed in February of 1944. But I'd gone down to Cincinnati to a tryout. Mr. McKechnie, the manager, was there along with one of the coaches. I think his name was Hans Lobert. And you know, I, for some reason, I got the ball over the plate that day and kind of impressed him. And so we wound up in February, signing a contract with the Reds. And that was a major league contract. And you know, never thinking that would ever appear in a ball game with the Reds. I knew somewhere along the line I'd be going to a farm, one of the farm teams, and but I spent, a little over a month with the Reds, and I would go down to the ballpark after school. They had a night game, and then on weekends if they were at home, and really didn't make any road trips at all. And then this one Saturday afternoon, we were playing the Cardinals, and June the 10th, 1944, I remember well, and I think it was a 13-0 ball game. So Mr. McKechnie thought it would be a good time to see what the young kid could do, and so they sent me down to warm up, and needless to say, when they told me to warm up, I just went haywire, scared to death, nervous, and
all that control left you.
Oh. But, you know, you look at it, heck, a couple of weeks prior to that, I was pitching against 12, 13, 14-year-olds over here at Wilson Junior High, and now all of a sudden I'm going to walk out there to face the likes of Stan Musial and Walker Cooper and people like that.
Yeah, that was a great team, Cardinals.
Well, that's the only year that the Browns and the Cardinals played a World Series, and of course the Cardinals won it that year. But it was, that's basically how it all happened.
So, as a 15-year-old ordinarily would, you were a little bit on the nervous side.
Well, I was scared more than, I guess both. I don't know how to describe it, but mm-hmm. Nevertheless, the big thing of that one first appearance is the fact that I got the first batter out, walked the second batter, got the third batter out, and had two strikes and no balls on the fourth batter, and then things fell apart for me. And, I never, well, as we like to say, it took 8 years to get the third out of that inning.
Yeah. All right. Now, where did you spend those 8 years in the minors?
Well, as I said, that was June the 10th, 1944. June the 12th, 1944, I was on a train from Birmingham, Alabama. And I went down there, and I appeared in one game in Birmingham, pitched a third of an inning, and gave up five more runs and a couple of hits, I think. And that was all I pitched that first year in organized ball, was one full inning, two-thirds with the Reds, one inning with Birmingham, and that was it for the year. I gave up 10 runs, two or three hits, I don't recall, one strikeout, 10 walks, I think, a couple of wild pitches.
All right. Then where did you go after that?
After that, I went to spring training with the Reds the following year, 1945, at Bloomington, Indiana, and they sent me to Syracuse, New York. I was there for a short period of time, came back down to Lyman, Ohio, in the Ohio-Indiana League, or the Ohio State League, I think it was at that time. And then the following year, I decided I'd like to get my amateur standing back my senior year at Hamilton High School, and so I stayed out of pro ball and got my amateur standing back and played all the sports at Hamilton High. I was captain of the All-State basketball team, All-State football. They had no All-State baseball team, and ran track. So that one year was very important.
Kept them pretty busy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Then in 46.
46, after our baseball season in high school was over, I rejoined the professional ranks at Muncie, Indiana. From that point on, I was that year, 46 at Muncie, 47. I was at Muncie. 46, I was eligible for high school sports. That's the way it was. And then 47, I reported to Muncie, Indiana, and then from Muncie, I went to 48. I went to spring training in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Alexandria, Louisiana, is where they trained. And spent some time there, and went to, from there to Columbia, South Carolina. The following year, I went to spring training again in Tulsa, and was shipped to Charleston, West Virginia. And that was 49, 1950. I went to spring training with the Buffalo Bisons, the International League, and it was a kind of I'll help you, you help me deal with Mr. Miller, Leo Miller, who was a general manager of the Buffalo team, and Mr. Giles, who's the president of the Reds. It was an interesting spring training because they were spending any time higher than Class A ball. I had a heck of a spring training with Buffalo, and we played the Philadelphia Athletics at West Palm Beach, and I was scheduled to pitch three innings. I pitched three innings and shut them out, give them one hit, struck out of four or five, and so now my hopes are really high that I'm going to make the AAA Buffalo Bisons. And so we break camp. How you doing? We break camp, and we stop in Charleston, South Carolina, and play Toronto for the International League. And yeah. I pitched, I think, four shutout innings against them. And I say, boy, I got it made. I'm in AAA for sure. But when we get back to the hotel, the bell captain had a page for me, and I tried to check it out, you know, who it was from, and it was from Mr. Miller. So I called his room, and he said, come up to the room. We wanted to talk to him. So I figured, gee whiz, he's going to offer me a contract. So I go up there, and of course, says, sit down. He says, Joe, we're going to send you back to Charleston.
Hmm.
And when he said that, boy, I let fly and showed my temperament and everything. And he tried to calm me down. Finally, I calmed down and listened. And he explained to me that this was just a protection deal with Mr. Giles, and I would go to spring training with them, and regardless of what I would have done, I was not going to back to Buffalo. So I went back to Charleston, West Virginia. The following year, 1951, I went to Tulsa, Oklahoma, spent the whole year in Tulsa, where I won 13 and lost 22. And then 1952, I went to spring training with the Reds and made the ball club, and was there through 1960, and away in 61, came back in 62, and then finished my career in 66 as an active player.
Mm-hmm. All right. In 52, you got one win, I see, and four losses. Who was the win?
To this day, I cannot tell you who that win was. I think it was the San Francisco Giants, but I'm not far. I mean, the New York Giants.
Yeah, they hadn't moved yet. So your best years look to me like to be 54, 55, 63, 65.
Yeah, well, when I came back after the 60 season, I had asked to be traded, and they traded me to Kansas City Athletics. And after the season, Kansas City released me. I went to spring training with Baltimore. I got in a vice there because they had a couple of young left-handers that they were going to take. Both of them had excellent springs, and I had an excellent spring myself. I was 32, they were 21 and 18, and they were 19. So I wound up with the California Angels for 6 weeks, I guess,
mm-hmm.
and then they released me, and that's when I decided to go back to the minor league, San Diego, and I was 9-1, I think, with the Padres in the old Pacific Coast League, and then I came back with the Reds, and again finished my career, but I really never thought I'd ever wind up back here. I mean, I was surprised.
You never know.
No.
Say, what was the what's the story on your 1960 season, which was a disappointment, I'm sure, 1-8.
Well, it was one of those years where just nothing really went right. You know, I could, the best example I can cite was, see, coach, good luck. Okay, we were playing in San Francisco. I came into the second inning, I think, in relief. The score was like 2-0. Giants in front. So we tied it up, and I pitched 10 shutout innings. They pinch hit for me in the 13th, I think it was. We don't score a run. The 14th inning, we scored 5 runs. That's kind of, it was just one of those years. You know, it's hard to accept.
Happens to nearly everybody.
That's right.
To so many of them, and boy.
Somewhere along
the line. Have a year where you just can't explain it.
It'll happen.
Yeah. You weren't too worried, though, that you were washed up at that point.
No.
It wasn't a year when you got the breaks.
No.
All right. What was your out pitch?
Well, basically, I lived with a slider and a fastball. Mm-hmm. Not until I came back to the Reds in 62 that Kansas City, I should say that Joe Gordon taught me to throw the slip pitch. And when I went to spring training with Baltimore, they refined it a little bit, helped me some more with it. And when I wound up in San Diego where I could really work on it, I came up with a good changeup. Now I got 3 pitches that I can throw at any time. And Jim Turner was a pitching coach with the Reds when I came back, and he taught me to throw a good curveball. So all of a sudden, I have 4 pitches instead of 2 to live with. So
you can do a lot with 4 pitches.
Oh yeah, a lot
compared
more.
To 2. What do you think was your best game you ever pitched?
Well, it was a losing game.
Well, that's like guys that play no hitters and get beat.
1956, we were thinking of the pennant race in September, and we had beaten the Milwaukee Braves 3 out of 4 in Milwaukee. We were within a game of first place, and we moved into St. Louis. And one of Vinegar and Mizell and I used to hook up all the time, it seemed like. And it was nothing going into the 8th inning, and Ken Boyle let off the 8th inning, and I'd gotten him out, I guess, 3 previous times on fastballs sliders, so I decided I'd throw a slow curve to him. First pitch, I did all right, he hit it in the soda stand up in left field in Old Busch Stadium, and we lost the ball game 1-0. And then the game in Houston, when they talk about losing no-hitters, where we won a no-hitter, that Ken Johnson pitched 1-0. That was a fun game. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Nick.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
All right. Now, who was your favorite manager that you played under?
Well, I liked all the managers I had. The only one I really didn't care much about was Roger Hornsby.
That's a common statement.
But other than that, all of the managers, I wouldn't really point out one as being any better than the other one.
Now, you were under Luke Sewell for a
little
while.
Luke Sewell, he was my first, second. Miss Bill McKechnie was the first. Luke Sewell.
Bill, everybody says, was a great guy.
Very nice
manager,
person.
Very good manager.
Yeah. Very nice man.
I think until Dick Williams went to the World Series with the Padres in 84, McKechnie was the only manager to lead three different teams in the World Series.
The World Series, right.
Yeah. Pittsburgh, St. Louis, and Cincinnati.
Yeah. Nice man.
How was Bertie Debbitt?
Bertie was a good man. He was a good manager. He helped me some in, as far as pitching, I think, just by showing, confidence a lot of times.
That's what you need
support.
The most. And Jimmy Dykes briefly in
58. Yeah. He took over for, he took over.
Took from Tibbetts.
That's right,
from Tibbetts. And then Mayo Smith briefed.
Right. Mayo was there a little over a year, I think. Dave Bristol.
And then, well, you got Hutch coming in there. Hutchinson.
That's right. That's right. Hutch and then Bristol, I guess.
Yeah, Hutch and Bristol was. I don't show him coming in until '66.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Hutchinson for several years.
Oh, Dick Sisler was there.
Yeah, he came. He replaced Hutchinson when he left, and was there for a year and a half or something. Hutch was quite a guy too.
Well, he was a tremendous competitor. I don't. All right. Hutch, he had a pretty good temper on him. He didn't back down from anything.
Mm-hmm.
He could raise a lot of cane. as basically all managers, I think, are pretty much the same. They just want you to give them a good, honest effort and watch your mental mistakes.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to drop a fly ball or boot a ground or
that. Yes. Human nature being what it is. All right, and so you were just really under Bristol part of the 66.
Yeah, just that was the whole year of 66. That was my last night.
Yeah. Now you've got another record that you hold with several other people that intrigues persons. I mentioned somebody just the other evening, and they said, how could that be? Think very hard, but struck out four guys in one inning.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Oh, it was, Jesus. Yeah, I was around 15.
Against whom?
Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I think the fourth strikeout was Johnny Logan, I believe.
Was there a pass ball on the catcher or a wild pitch or what?
It was a pass ball.
Yeah.
A curveball.
Yeah.
Don't see it to this day.
Okay, now you played with a lot of great guys and, of course, against a lot of other great guys in your days. Let me just mention a few names, and if you think of anything special about any one of them, or an incident or episode or anecdote or anything, stop it.
Okay.
Like Frank McCormick.
Well, of course, Frank was just a great hitter. I mean, he
really was.
A natural hitter, not a guy that... You know, he's a big man, but yet, you know, when you first looked at Frank McCormick, you say, well, God, he should hit 35 home runs, but his swing wasn't structured that way.
Yeah.
He used all the ballpark. Good hitter.
And Bucky Walters was on his way out by the time.
Pretty much, but he was a sinker ball pitcher, and not overpowering, but had good control, pitched low all the time, but he had good control.
Yeah. Two or three great seasons, 39, 40 along in there. Joe Adcock.
Well, Joe wasn't here. I played with him in Columbia, South Carolina. He is a big, strong old country boy. Hit a ball a country mile. In fact, he hit one in Nashville, Tennessee. An old Sulphur Dale, was, I think it was 440 feet straight away center field. He hit the thing right dead center over that fence. He was a big, strong,
And so was Ted Kluszewski.
I've always said that everybody said it. You know, Clue was a sweep type hitter. You know, everything was like that. He had no flexibility, no in his wrist.
No wrist.
If he would have, he probably would have made him forget about all of them.
Yeah.
He was unbelievable. He had flying drives out of ballparks 10 feet in the air, as high as the ceiling.
I got to see him play a good bit at the end of the 59 season. I was playing in South Bend, and the Sox picked him up.
Yeah,
he came over and did a hell of a job for him, and then had quite a series.
Yeah.
How was Ken Raffensperger?
Well, Raffy, he had the knuckleball and the forkball. If you ask Stan Musial, name you six pitchers, toughest pitchers he faced, Raffensperger be one of them. He used to drive Stan nuts.
And Gus Bell.
Well, Gus, to me, was an most underrated player in the National League in the 50s. And of course, he had to compete against Duke Snyder and Willie Mays and center field. And Gus was very underestimated as a center fielder, without a doubt.
Rocky Bridges.
Well, Rock was a clown of the troops when we had him, and he still is. He was a coach for the Giants, but Rocky was a good little utility ball player, but he kept the clubhouse very loose. He
and that's
always joking.
That's a valuable guy.
Absolutely. It means a lot.
Teams have let the wrong guy go at times and regretted it later.
Absolutely.
And I'll be sorry if the Padres don't re-sign Bevacqua, because he's one
he's
of those
that kind of guy. Yeah.
Padres.
Right.
Art Fowler.
Well, Art was a funny guy. He always said he hated to run. He always told the pitching coach, Tom Ferry, that if running one ball game, Jesse Owens will 140 every year.
Not bad.
He didn't like to run, but he was a good pitcher and had a good slider, a good fast sinking fastball, and he came up later on with one of those slip pitches, slippery pitches, you know, where you put your moisture on.
If he had any inclinations in that direction then, because he certainly was accused of his pitching coach.
Oh, yeah, he threw it.
Wally Post.
Well, Wally, he's probably my closest friend in baseball. We started playing together in Muncie, Indiana in 1947. And of course, we played quite a number of years with the Reds. But Wally, they still talk about the home run he hit in Old Bush Stadium when he hit one off the Budweiser Eagle at deep left center field. Now, that's a long way. But he had tremendous power and had one of the best arms ever in the game of baseball, I thought. They talked about Carl Perillo, who had a great arm. But Wally was right there with him and very accurate. One of the big assets I think at Post had was going to the line in right field, fielding the ball and making a pivot, going back in the second or third. It was really a phenomenal way you could get that done.
Smokey Burgess.
Well, Smokey, you probably go down to North Carolina right now and take Dwight Gooden with you and tell him that we're going to give you 10 minutes to loosen up, Smokey, and you have to hit Dwight Gooden. He'd probably hit it.
He was phenomenal, I can't remember, but he either held the record for most pinch hits, or still does. Maybe Manny Mota. I think Mota passed him.
It's close.
Yeah. But he used to do that when he was with the White Sox. I heard him. Like you say, anytime they bring him up, with the game on the line.
I like to pitch to him. I was one that. Oh, I like the small catchers. We had a kid, Hobie Landry, for a while. I like to pitch to those little guys. For some reason, I guess I saw more of the glove than I did of them.
Yeah.
Of course, Ed Bailey caught me a lot.
Yeah.
Hank Boyles, Johnny Edwards, they were all good catchers. But for some reason, I just felt more comfortable with one of those little fellows out there.
Hey, Rick. Frank Robinson.
Well, to me, Frank Robinson's the best ball player we've had in Cincinnati. Robbie never made a mistake. He never made mistakes on the playing field. He's a great hitter. He didn't have a good arm, but he was very accurate. Never threw to the wrong base. He was, to me, the best ball player we've ever had here.
Didn't they realize that they were letting him go too soon when they said?
Well, no, apparently not, because they said that he was an old 32 or whatever he was at that time. All he did, of course, was go over to Baltimore and
be the MVP.
Yeah.
Only guy still to do it in both leagues.
Right.
Brooks Lawrence.
Well, Brooks, he had that one year where he won, 14 games, something like that in a row.
Yeah,
and
he
was
total, I think.
He was a slider, sinker ball pitcher. when he was on, had that ball.
What happened to him that he never had any more good years?
Well, I think he lost that consistency. It's so important.
There are a lot of pitchers that show in the record books, that'll hit 21 season and never come close to it again.
Well, there's a lot of luck plays in it too. Like we call it the Adam ball. You get those at the right time, it saves a lot of runs.
And Roy McMillan.
Well, Roy, I always thought he was one of the best defensive players ever to play the game.
He was defensively, I'm sure.
He was outstanding. I like to see him played on some of the AstroTurf fields now, where that always was a sure hop, because on the grass fields, he made plays that were unbelievable.
had that reputation.
And great man.
Johnny Klipstein.
The Clipper, well, he threw hard, and he could had a tendency to get very wild.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a good fastball and a good curveball. And he really came into his own, more or less, when we had him. And then he went on to Washington, I think, and the Dodgers.
That's where the Cubs were.
Yeah. Well, that's where he started.
Yeah. Perky.
Perky was a knuckleball pitcher, and well, he had that 120 games one year, I think.
A little bit like Lawrence. In that he had that one good year.
Yeah.
But Perky was pretty good.
He was pretty consistent.
He played baseball
year in and year out.
Was Haddix past his prime when you...
No, I don't know. He went from here to Pittsburgh and pitched that perfect game against Milwaukee.
Well,
I think the thing about Harvey, everybody was kind of surprised at him because of his stature. That he, you know, he threw pretty hard. People don't realize it. Haddix threw the ball pretty hard.
Yeah. You were with Don Newcomb a little bit.
Yeah, he was here, I think, 1959 or 60.
Yeah, I don't have the year, but... He was nearly through.
He was on his way down, right.
Why didn't he win as many as the people thought he was going to win when he was with the Dodgers? He had one or two awfully good years, but...
You know, that's, again, he was basically a fastball slider pitcher, and that's an old Ebbets Field was a fairly tough part to pitch in, And there again, when you rely on that fastball, and, you know, it's a fastball slider, you lose a little off that fastball line. It makes a heck of a difference.
Oh, yeah.
It's strange.
How about Jim Brosnan?
Brosnan, we got him from the Cardinals. And him and Bill Henry, of course, probably one of the best 1-2 punchers in baseball out of the bullpen. He just did a whale of a job.
What about the book you wrote?
I didn't read it. Long season, is that what they call it?
I think it was, although I'm not certain.
I don't read those things too much.
And Veda Pinson.
Well, Veda had as much ability as anyone I've seen in the game, but for some reason it just didn't come out. You know, he could run like the devil. He
sure could.
He had had power, but for some reason it just didn't come out fully into what I think people expected.
It's Jerry Lynch.
Jerry Lynch, uh-huh. Well, old Jerry took that theory, you know, you're not dangerous unless you go up there swinging, and boy, he did. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
All right. He went up there, you know, he cut and slice it. He said, "Hell, first thing I see, it looks like I can reach. I'm going after him." And he did a whale of a job.
You may not have seen him play, but JoJo Moore with the Giants back in the 30s and 40s. Had that reputation as a first ball pitcher, first ball hitter.
Yeah.
Led off both he and Tom Hubble and others told me about him. He really wrecked everybody on Cincinnati one day. Hit the first ball five times, four doubles and singles.
Yeah.
The manager, whoever he was, told the whole team in the locker room, anybody throws a strike on the first pitch to Moore today gets fined $500. Derringer, I think, was pitching. He goes out and his first ball lands way up on the screen. Jay Hook.
Well, Jay, we signed Jay and Jim O'Toole at the same time.
I got his name next.
I'll never forget when we looked at both of them. We said, Hooks, you know, he's going to be a good one. But O'Toole was kind of, you know, he said, well, maybe. And it was just an absolute
way around. Yeah.
Jay never, you know, I guess one of the interesting things I remember, Jay Hook was, it was the year I was with Baltimore in spring training. And that was the first year of the expansion, the Mets, the Astros, I guess, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're playing the Mets in Miami, and Jay Hook starts the ball game. And Casey was the skipper, and they let him in there. And I mean, our guys just beat the hell out of that poor kid. Brooks Robinson, hit one straightaway center over that fence in Miami Stadium. I don't know if you ever seen it.
No, I haven't seen
it.
It's
probably about, I'd say that fence is near 30 feet high, 410 feet. And either he pitched it.
as Hudson. Missed the whole second half. I think we're ready to go
so,
now.
So after the game, they asked Casey's. Said, well, what'd you leave that kid in there for so long? He said, well, he says he's my opening day pitcher and I want him to get some experience. And I mean, there were rows and ropes too. They were bloopers.
Leave it to Casey. Come up with that.
How was Cal McNish?
Cal was a good man. He had a good curveball, good slow curveball. And of course, Cal, I guess when we got him, he was kind of near the end of his career. But he was a good competitor.
And you even had Billy Martin.
Yeah. Well, Billy played second base for us. We got him along with Gordy Coleman from the Cleveland Indians for Johnny Temple. I think there was another person involved. I can't recall exactly who it was.
Well, he was, I suppose, very much the same Billy then that he is now.
Well, he was a fireball. You know, we had that incident in Chicago with the Cubs and Jim Brewer where Billy threw the bat at him, which maybe he did, but Brewer had thrown at Martin, and I think Billy got a bad deal out of that because I don't think he was the one that broke Jim Brewer's jaw.
Brewer threw at a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Well, we all did. To brush them back in. They say half of that plate's mine, half's yours. Cool with my half, we're going to do something about it.
Hell, one batter, I could see two or three pitches and one turn at bat.
Sure, I've seen him.
Yeah. And Eddie Casco.
Well, Eddie, he did a good job at third for us, at shortstop for us. He was just, a good steady ball player. He was nothing, no big flamboyant thing, but he just would do a steady job for us.
And you had Hauser for a time.
I played with Dick at Kansas City.
Yeah.
He was a shortstop there.
Yeah. He finally had his day.
That was a hard series for me to root because both those guys I played with, Hauser and Whitey Herzog.
Oh, Dean Chance.
Well, Dean, I played with him a little bit in
L.A.?
Los Angeles. And I remember it was just a matter when you watched Dean throw that somewhere along the line his arm had to go because he put so much pressure on it. But he had good stuff, I'll tell you that.
Sure
he had great stuff.
And the great Bo Belinsky.
I knew he was I saw him pitch that no-hitter against Baltimore.
Right?
Yeah, that was I've watched Maloney pitch. That was after.
I think
that might have been the first no-hitter I was able to witness in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
But Bowie, he wasn't anything to write home about as when you're talking about a pitcher.
Oh, no.
But he had one of those days.
That's right.
And it worked out.
There's some of the no-hitters go to no-name pitcher, like Bobo Howell.
Bobo Howell. I played against him, and he was at San Antonio when I was at Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not mistaken.
Now tell me about Joey Jay and Maloney.
Well, Joey Jay, he pitched some of the best games you want to see. Big, strong guy, and I think the thing that Hutch used to get kind of mad with Joey because he fell in love with his slop stuff, slow curves and all that kind of crap. And Hutch would get kind of upset with him, but Joey pitched some great ball in, of course, that 1960 year when they won the pennant, he was part of it. And Jim Maloney, on a given day, there's nobody that's ever picked up a baseball had better stuff than Jim Maloney.
That's right.
On a given day.
He had either two or three no-hitters, as I remember.
He
had two in 1 year.
So he pitched. When he lost one, 10 innings, no hitter to the Mets.
How was Dick Sisler?
Dick was a good manager. I think he probably could have been a little more forceful, you know. He's a nice man. He was a very humorous person.
Must have taken after his father. Did you ever meet his father?
No, I never did. George? No.
Yeah. George was one of the greats. Don Blasingame.
Well, of course, poor old Blazer, he had his best year and lost his job, to Rhodes.
Yeah.
But Don was a pesky little hitter, slap hitter, nothing.
Yeah.
You didn't have to worry about him hitting the ball out of the park. He put it in play, moving around.
Now, what about Rhodes when he first came up?
Well, Pete was a very confident kid. I guess you could say cocky, but believed in his ability.
And part of his makeup all the way along, yeah.
I don't think anybody would have, at that time, would have said, well, someday he's going to break Tykoff's record.
No.
But he sure as hell has done it.
In fact, you could go back even 5 years ago or six, and it still would have been very doubtful. Because you didn't expect that he could continue to produce until age 44 or so, like he has.
He did a heck of a job last year.
Steve Morris.
Well, Steve was a good defensive third baseman. Offensively, he had a little power, but I think he got hit in the head in Detroit, I believe it was, and from that point on, I believe it kind of things kind of slipped.
He was managing the A's a year or two ago, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he was hooked on with somebody else, I think a coach.
Well, I was talking of him taking the pirate job.
Well, they finally settled on Jim Leyden. Was it Doc Ellis that you were with?
Yeah, no.
Sammy?
Sammy Ellis.
Yeah.
Sammy was, that one year, he had Bill McCool.
Yeah, I was going to mention him next.
Had a great year out of the bullpen, and then, of course, they both became starters. Sammy won 20 that one year, and Billy McCool hurt his arm, and of course, that was about it.
Yeah, Padres drafted him in the expansion draft, and he never did a thing.
No, but he had Padres arm, but I'll tell you, one of those two kids could get it up there in a hurry. McCool was sneaky as hell, and he'd pop that ball on you before you realize.
And Tony Perez, as they say, Perez.
Tony Perez is, to me, the class of baseball.
He's a great guy.
He's just the guy in his own class, really. He was so cooperative. He's just a major leaguer, what I like to say.
That was great when I think Rose was put his thing that you're, well, I'm going to let the youngster play the base tomorrow.
You're younger.
Milt Pappas.
Well, Milt, he was here for a year and a little plus a little, and when he wanted to pitch, he was a damn good pitcher.
He hit it on the head.
Yeah. He wanted to go. He could go.
I believe that summed him up in his whole career with Baltimore and the Cup.
But he won the game to win 108 in both leagues.
Yeah.
And he won.
Yeah. And I think he needed one or two to reach. Well, maybe it was just 200 to reach 200.
Yeah. I think that's
Leo Cardenas.
Well, Leo was a good shortstop. He was, I would say, compare him to, maybe Concepcion a little bit.
Wasn't as good as McMillan.
Not defensively, no. But Leo had some pop in his bat.
Mm-hmm.
Had a good arm. But he was a very adequate shortstop.
Tommy Helms.
Tommy's probably turned a double play as well as anyone. And then, of course, he's crucial. Hey, Jack. He lost his job to Rhodes.
That's right. When did you start? Let's put it this way. After 66, what did you get into then?
Well, the radio.
Right away.
It came on. I went to all through spring training that year before we decided on it. That was 67. Judge, how you doing? Where you been hiding? Pumping iron? I thought you'd be playing golf today, the sun's out.
Now, did you broadcast with Wade Hoyt?
No, I took, Wade retired, I guess, 64. And then Claude Sullivan.
Long ago.
Yeah, Claude Sullivan. And Jim McIntyre took over. And then in 67, winter 66, they approached me about it. Because I'd been doing basketball in Miami,
yeah,
up at Oxford.
Yeah.
And I said, well, geez, it's a thought, because I was 38 years old. And it's time to
think about
the future.
Yeah.
So I accepted it, although I went all through spring training and actually told the ball club, see, that spring, Ted Davidson was the only veteran or experienced left-handed pitcher we had.
Yeah.
And his wife shot him in the stomach in the bar down in Tampa. Yeah. So I said to Dave Bristol, the manager, I told him, I said, we'll call this thing off until next year or whatever, because we have no left-handed pitcher with any experience. And he said, well, let's talk to the old man. I went and talked to him, and he mentioned about the fact that me being traded to Detroit or Philadelphia, and I said, no, not me.
Not interested.
So that's when I shut it down.
Okay. Did you know Wade, though?
Oh, Lord, yeah. Yes. Lord, yes.
He was a character, right?
Oh, he was quite a guy.
Yeah.
Well, I guess early in his radio career, he came up missing for a couple of weeks, they say. He hit the sauce pretty heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess he, before he passed away, hadn't had a drink of anything in well over 40 years.
I wrote him about 3 years ago when I was lining up people to talk with, and he said he was tied up with some outfit that was going to make something about his life and whatnot, and he simply couldn't talk to anybody all the while that was going on. Then I have a recollection that he got married just a year or two before he died.
He did.
Yeah. Now, let's turn to the present. The Reds under Rose. The minute he got here as manager, you could see the difference.
Well, I think the biggest thing, I always think positive. I don't care if we got 25 guys that can't throw a ball from here across the street, but when you start a season, for me, you think, you can win a pennant regardless of whether you can or not. You think that way, and I think this was a thing that that Pete came in and just turned the thinking around. I mean, they made it into a positive thing, and like last year in spring training, everything was talking about winning a pennant. We can win 92 games, we can win a pennant. Win, talking positive, and I think that's the biggest thing, plus his reputation. There's no question about that. All those guys know how he plays and wants you to play it. But still, I think the big thing is he talked positive. I mean, he was totally positive about the whole thing. To me, that's when you have the skipper talking about winning. Hell, if you don't win it, you don't win it. But if you don't start off feeling you can win it, then you're in serious trouble.
You sure are. All right. Trade for
Denny?
Yeah,
John Denny.
John Denny.
Well, I think it's a good acquisition. We probably could. I like the young people on our pitching staff, but still, I guess I can understand Pete and Mr. Burgess. They want a veteran that's been through the war, so to speak, and now they got him with John Denny and to go along with Soto.
I can't remember right now who they gave up to get him.
We gave up Gary Reeves and Tommy Hume.
Well, neither one of those figure.
That's true. Hume, I think a lot of people were surprised they let him go with him. I thought it was kind of a slur to Hume when they told him, according to the paper now, I don't know if that's true or not, but they said it. Because of the financial figures, you have to take Hume, in other words, which I thought was, that's true, but I don't know if that's true. I thought
too
it was
bad,
unfair to Hume.
Was Browning as good a first-year pitcher as you've seen in recent times?
A little rascal. I tell you, we call him a little bulldog.
Yeah, I saw him twice in San Diego. And he's
comes right after.
Yeah.
I like this theory. Guy hits a home run, he said, well, let's see if the next guy can. He didn't worry about it. That was the difference.
That's a lot of difference.
Soto, see, Soto, he would let that stuff bother him.
Yeah.
Consequently, cost him.
That's, I guess, the answer to why Soto hasn't done all that everybody thinks he can.
No. Well, I think he found out this year that everything is on his back now. You know, I think he kind of had that feeling, and I believe. Again, as I mentioned about putting pressure on individuals, I think they put a lot of pressure on Mario, and he thought he had to win every day the game he pitched, and
he
really forced himself. So I think with Browning's year and some progress in other people, I think God, if Tibbs would have been 500, we win the division title by three or four games.
How did they happen to let Rebrand go?
Well, he just didn't progress, make the progress that they thought he would. And, there was not a whole lot of confidence in his fastball, but he's pitching now the way, really, we tried to talk to him into pitching, but it just didn't, it was late coming out, he's a heck of a kid. I've known Charlie ever since he was up at Oxford, so he went to Miami.
I know that.
He did a whale of a job for the Royals.
The Royals, exactly.
All right. If Soto wins 20 and Denny wins 15 and Browning wins close to 20, they certainly ought to challenge this year.
Oh, I think, Soto and Tibbs having a tough year last year.
Yeah.
We had that one bad streak out west. We came out there and the Dodgers nailed us 3 out of 4, and we just never regrouped. And we put pressure on them the rest of the year here too. I think that tells you something about the ball club. They didn't go in the towel and kept putting pressure on the Dodgers, but by golly, the Dodgers bought it off. They didn't give them credit. So. Our ball club's going to be better because Buddy Bell will understand the league more. He'll understand the pitching in our league.
He'll be here all year.
Bo Diaz, he'll start out in spring training. He's going to be a plus. Mickey Soski is going to be settled in left field the way it looks now. And, of course, the outfield with Parker and Davis or Eddie Milner, Oster at second. I think Ron, if he can drive in, say, 50, 55 runs this year, everything about our ball club is definitely on the upswing. I mean, there's nothing to look back on at all. Everything's going toward the top.
Is Concepcion going to give you another good year?
Well, I think that's probably going to be one of the big question marks this spring. And maybe, because I know Pete wasn't happy at all with him last year and his performance. And we have this young kid, Kurt Stillwell, from out of California, our number one draft pick a couple of years ago. And defensively, he can play here right today. And apparently, he had a very good instructional league in Florida. He was down there, saw him a lot, so we'll see what happens this spring. But if this kid shows any signs, I would have to think Pete won't hesitate to put him in there.
Well, Pete wouldn't.
No, because
he wants to win it.
That's right.
He wants to win it. Well, I would think it ought to be a pretty good race this year between the Dodgers with that pitching of theirs and certain other players.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to be in it.
Yeah, they're.
And the Padres may bounce back. They make a bigger threat than they did last year. I don't think the front office situation helped anybody.
No, it's most of those things happen, they do.
Dick Williams is a little bit. Certainly not the same year. A little bit like Willie Martin and wearing out his welcome after several seasons.
Well, you take the Padres, you look at their ball club, you lose Alan Wiggins, you say, well, hell, he only hit two 40 or whatever it was. Yeah, when he...
That wasn't the whole story. Yeah.
Well, plus the other problem.
No matter what he hit, he was on...
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So you lose a guy like that, and you don't realize what that does. You say, well, sure, he can steal 70, stole 70, but, you know, people don't realize how that helps the hitter. You know, when you're out there pitching,
sure.
When you know Wiggins is going to go, yeah. And all of a sudden your pitching, your concentration switches to
yeah.
A little bit here, a little bit there, instead of all of it here and not worrying about over there.
It didn't seem to bother him until all of a sudden in July it caught up with
yeah.
him. Until then they had...
McReynolds, he was hurt. Oh,
he was hurt, but he certainly did not perform up to his potential.
Probably the only guy, Kennedy was off.
Kennedy had a bad year.
Right.
He's had a couple that aren't too good.
Right. Nettles wasn't bad.
No, but he doesn't move as much as he used to. He doesn't cover the same ground. You've got to expect that. Garvey is a consistent guy who gives a
year in and year out.
He's remarkable in many ways. And Tony Gwynn, I think, is going to be a star for years to come.
He's quite a young man.
But they could use, and they didn't do any trading at all so far.
No.
Made a move. That's amazing.
Yeah, with Taylor Jack.
Yeah, somebody's afraid to trade with him or something. But if Hawkins and Hoyt and Dravecki and Shaw pitch up to their potential, they've got starters, Gossage and Lefferts.
What's it? The right-handed?
Young reliever, McCullers.
No, David, Puerto Rican or...
De Leon?
De Leon, yeah.
No, he's Puerto Rican, I think. He's got to prove that he's got it again.
Yeah.
He hasn't had it the last two years, really. Some of it was arm trouble, elbow trouble. For two seasons there, he was really very helpful. What do you feel about the DH contract?
Well, I hope we never have it. I realize that it's an advantage offensively, but I don't think it makes a good game in baseball. I think.
Yeah. I think most people feel that way, right?
Yeah.
I believe the solution that Ubaroth's talking about to the World Series is the right one.
Yeah.
Let them use the DH in when they play a game in the American League City rather than every other year. What about artificial turf?
Well, it has its advantages. You know, down here we probably have saved, since the stadium's been there 15 years, we've probably saved 100 ball games before
many.
Because of it.
Yeah. That's his main virtue, to
sure.
the part I'm concerned. That and the true bounce, but it's hard. Hard on the feet.
Oh, it gets very uncomfortable to play on the summertime.
Wow. And, Johnny Vandermeer told me that they ought to go back to the 21-man roster if they're talking about expansion.
Well, then you have to cut down on the... I think they should cut back on the schedule, too, but you're not going to do that.
Never going to get that again.
They're going to have the money in the coffers.
Yeah.
It's too damn expensive to operate now.
Could a team operate pretty much the same level of efficiency with 23 men on the roster?
I would have to. I would think so.
They could always bring somebody up from the minors if in case of an injury.
It's all according how the, you know, if you get into a bunch of doubleheaders now with a pitching staff, but I think you could operate very well with an 8-9-man pitching staff, but if you go according to schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get nailed with a couple of doubleheaders in a week, things like that.
That's related again to expansion. If they stick to the 25-man roster and want to expand even by two more teams, aren't they pulling the
Wiggins at four.
Quality down?
Absolutely. It just takes it right on down the line.
And if they do like there, some people are talking, six teams in the next 10 years, that's...
You know, eventually it'll even out because the talent will be spread so far that it'll even out, but it's not going to happen in 5 years, you know. Well, you look at the Astros, how long they've been.
Yeah.
They haven't won a pennant yet. They won a division title, they haven't won a pennant yet.
Right.
And what about free agency?
Well, that's part of the game. As far as contracts, to me, I think that they should be year-to-year basis. I mean, the free agency bit is okay. It's a vehicle for the players to make more money, but the only thing I would like to see is, hey, you know, if I win 20 games this year, I get paid for it next year. But if I only win 10 games, then, you know, I have to suffer the consequence. But now, well, it's like John Denny. There's nothing against John Denny, but we're going to pay him $1 million this year. The Reds are, and he won 11 or 12 games last night. You know, that's not right in my book.
I agree with you.
But I don't
think all of the old players feel that.
If I had my chances, I'd take it too.
Yeah. Carl Hubbell says nobody's going to put out his absolute best if he's got a 5-year guaranteed contract. How can you expect him to be out there with the intensity?
Well, they probably are, they have the intensity, but it's just not, they don't, it doesn't wash them out like it should.
Yeah.
Roll like it should.
Yeah. How bad is the drug situation?
Well, that's something I couldn't, you know, as far as our ball club, and the Parker thing, of course, we all know about, but I couldn't tell you if anyone uses it. I mean, I don't know how to identify a person.
I don't either.
That uses it. So therefore, hopefully it's corrected now with this thing in Pittsburgh and what the commissioner's going to be talking to these individuals. And I'm sure the players' union will have some things for them in the spring and hopefully be able to just eliminate it. It's a bad knock on the game.
What if you brought the Sox, everyone who was mentioned in that Pittsburgh case, with about 2 months suspension?
Well, I don't.
What do with Parker out of the lineup?
Well, just give it. We got a young kid, two young kids, that, like Cal Daniels and Paul O'Neill, that would be given an opportunity, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I don't look for him to do anything that way. I think that there might be some kind of a work program where they have to, you know, visit schools or something, talk about it, things of that nature for a year.
Of course, Wiggins was doing that all the time.
Yeah.
Diego, and the police said he's the most effective guy we ever had, and they were all just gung-ho for him, and
there
all of a sudden he's off on that guy. What was the hardest thing about being a major league ball player through the season?
Well, I think being away from your family is
exactly
a tough thing. You know, you travel so dang gone much.
Yeah. And, so many of them have told me.
You get home from the ballpark late at night during when school's in, and by the time you get up the next morning, the kids are gone.
They're gone.
By the time they get home from school, you're gone.
You're gone.
So, you know, you just didn't. That was, to me, the toughest part of it.
Yeah, sure. How many children have you?
Two boys.
Yeah.
One's 34 and 32. One graduated from Miami. He's a phys ed instructor down in Fairfield. And runs his batting range, golf range, and the other one's a speech and hearing pathologist. He graduated from Ohio University.
Yeah, real good. What difference do you see in the attitude of the players today as compared to your time in the majors?
Well, I think they have a more secure feeling, with the contracts, the long-term contracts,
that's
the union and all that kind of hell. Their pension plan is unbelievable. So, you know, the security of the thing for them is so much greater than when we put it.
Some of the old timers have been pretty strong in their, I would say, even bitterness about the pension plan not being retroactive at all to give them any help. And some of them I know really need it. With the amount they're getting into that pension fund now every year, they ought to start.
Well, I think this last contract session, they are going back. And I was talking to Jake Gibbs the other day,